Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another episode of Deliberate Practice on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. This week, we are focused on the idea of confidence. We need to build it, or we need to find it right now at this point in the season, and it's kind of critical to what we're going to do moving forward. And joining me on the podcast is our guest host, Andy Ryland. Andy, great to be talking with you here in week three.
Excited about the third part of the series. First two have been fantastic, and I think the confidence thing is something all coaches talk about. We talk about developing confidence, and I really like what you mentioned about finding confidence. We think we got some unique ideas to help coaches find where their players are most confident.
I think that's the key in this, Andy, is as coaches, we need to understand that maybe what we are confident in does not exactly reflect what our players are confident in. So we're going to talk about some strategies today to help us figure out where our players are at in terms of their confidence and the things that they feel they can hang their hat on. We're going to focus on all three phases of the game. We'll kick it off with the offensive part of it and get right into it. And today we're going to focus on the quarterback. And the idea is we really want to get some input from him. And to kind of flesh that out, we're going to use the half line or half field. I would say that we don't have to think of it just in terms of only half the field. You need to think in terms of your concepts and how they work. So this may be, for example, a middle of the field drill. We might be working our four verts like we talked about last week and working our seam reads, or you know what our guy who has to read the safety and either maybe dig or bend it or continue on his landmark, or maybe it's a dig and a post, but it's some kind of combination that's going to attack a certain area of the field. So you can make it one half of the field, you can make it a middle of the field, etc. With the idea of we're going to do things that are going to attack only part of the defense. And I think there's a couple key things in setting this up and some thoughts. The first would be that there's a lot of teams out there that based on what they're going to see, they may only work half of the field anyway, and maybe they build, for example, a popular strategy is, you know, a cover three beater on one side, a cover two beater on the other, or maybe it's a zone beater, a man beater, those kinds of things where the quarterback kind of figures out what the coverage is and then works that side of the field. So in that respect, there's more efficiency in setting it up this way. But I think for those teams that work full field drills, there's a lot of application here as well. For a lot of teams, they don't have five quarterbacks to throw every route that's being run on the field. So, you know, maybe in this one, just focusing on two receivers, only one is going to get the ball. But we're working on a certain aspect of that quarterback's read as well. And I think the key thing to this, though, is if we are getting to only half of the field, is that the quarterback has to do all of his work, though. So what would bring him to that half of the field? Like I said, maybe it's a pre-snap read. Maybe he has a look on the other side. You know, you look at the popular R4 method that, you know, we've had Dub Maddox on the podcast speaking about that. And so he's going to look at a rhythm route, maybe on the other side, and then come back to the route combination on the other. So for us, for what we would do at the college level, we did have essentially what would be a rhythm route or something to that effect. Dan Gonzalez calls it an advantage route, but it's our first look as the quarterback, and that might be coming from the other side before the quarterback would work that half field side. So what we would have him do is always start his progression, even though it's imaginary, over on the other side, and then work to the other. Now, as far as maybe some cues you could put in there, it's very easy for someone to kind of stand out there and just be that cue and either move off of it, or maybe he's looking to that side and the coach is making sure that his eyes are going over there first before he comes to the other side. Now you've developed that vision discipline that you need, because you know that it's not going to work in a game that he just works to the half of the field. I would say for those of you who work one-on-ones in that regard, you have to work it the same way. If that is not a route you're throwing as a first look, that maybe it's a second or even a third, that quarterback should take his eyes through some kind of a progression to get there, that he's not just staring down that one receiver. So that's the first key. But as we start to flush out what is this quarterback confident, what is my team confident in, I think the best thing to do is to let him make all the calls during that period. So maybe it's a 5 or 10 minute period during practice. Whatever quarterback is up in that particular rep in the drill, he's responsible for calling what they're going to run. Number one, it shows you, can he call these things correctly? Can your players line up on their own and execute them correctly? So you start to see their proficiency in their understanding of your routes. But number two, I would, and I got this from Tom Lombardo, I would keep note on my script or in a sheet of paper, what is he calling over the course of that period, because it's going to start to tell you what he feels best about. He wants to be successful. Most likely, at this point in the season, early on, he's going to call those things he feels most confident in. I think this allows you, number one, to see what he is confident in. But number two, at some point, maybe you do need to step in as a coach and force him maybe to start to work other things so that you build confidence in other things. In terms of looking at how the drill is set up, I do like using, obviously, safeties and corners in this. But I think it's an opportunity to get your underneath coverage in there as well and start to give that full picture of what the quarterback is looking at. If you wanted to add some other things into it, I think it's a good opportunity if you want to run your offensive line one-on-ones during this period against the defensive line. I think it's a good opportunity for that to work half line and to allow the quarterback to start to get the feel of the pocket as well. But as in any passing drill, you want to keep the pressure on the quarterback as far as timing. I always like to put him on a stopwatch and click from the snap to his throw to see how much time he really took and give him that feedback on that as well, because he has to have that game-like timing here. So if he's feeling confident in a route, but he's getting that route off late, that tells you there's some problems in that thought process as well. So it's part of understanding where they're at and what they think they're good at, but also being able to give them feedback on, is that the truth or what things do you need to work on to make this better?
No, it's a great point. And I think you learn a lot about your quarterback's development when you start letting them call the plays. You know, the age-old adage, right, that everyone wants to go deep. Well, if you get up there and you're getting called verticals, 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 that shows you a little bit maybe about your quarterback's development and their thought process, and they're not thinking maybe more deeply about the game or the pattern recognition. Also, to your point, you'll see a ton about what they're comfortable with, and I've always found it really interesting. You'll gain some insight. You talked about us as coaches having confidence in a play, but players may have confidence in a different play. Well, us as coaches may see a particular player with a particular skill set. What happens if the same receiver, every time he comes up, the receivers call verticals? Maybe you start to get the sense that our quarterbacks ID this guy as a deep threat, or we're calling particular, maybe a return route or some sort of arrow route where your small space change of direction. Hey, our guys really trust this slot receiver in these small space quickness routes. That can tell you about what your players are viewing about each other, and ultimately our play calls need to match their confidence level and what they see. So it's a great way for us to discover that knowledge and then be able to better work together from a game plan perspective. So giving the players the ownership, but not a free-for-all, doing it for a very detailed purpose of learning, I think gives you some great information.
I had Andrew Coverdale on the podcast, and he talked about what he calls his like it or love it list, and how he talks with his quarterbacks, both his first guy, second guy, even his third guy, about what are the things from the game plan, the things that were working that you love, that you like, that you dislike. And obviously, he would like to see over the course of the season that love it list grow, but he wants them to make some honest decisions and input into what are the things that we're confident in the game plan. Because when it comes to it, the coach is not the guy out there on game day who has to execute. And it, regardless of how confident we may feel, it really has to do with what that player is feeling and how he's been able to progress through your offensive system and learn things and have that understanding that he can go out there on game day and execute with confidence.
No, and it reminds me of an interview I once heard about working with the difference between Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. And they both had auto conversions that they wanted out of their slot receiver versus three deep, but they were different conversions. They both, one wanted a seam, one wanted the dig route out of their slot. And that just shows you that even at that level, players have favorite routes or favorite concepts and will ask that of their teammates, the receivers, or the offensive coordinators. If a coach can take a step back and allow the quarterbacks to paint that picture for them, we have a better chance, I think, of creating a game plan that they're much more comfortable with.
And I would think about extending some of those ideas, like Coach Lombardo would not only do that in 7-on-7, he would do some of those things in team. And I think that's important because we live in a world where our quarterback is making a lot of decisions, even in the run game, whether that is a decision to give or keep and run it yourself or a decision to pull and throw on the RPO. There's a lot of decisions that have to be made there, and I think you can learn a lot from your quarterback. Again, I don't think it's a situation maybe where he calls the entire script, but you cut out those segments of practice where you give them that input. And I think the important thing afterwards is to communicate with them and have that list of here's what you called today, here's how we performed, what's your thought process on this, what do you think? Don't always tell them that here's what I saw, here's what you need to do. Get back from them what they're thinking, understand their process, and then be able to adjust either what you're going to call or adjust things that he needs to start to think about as well.
100%. I mean, it's, you hear it again, the partnership, right? The great chemistry between a play caller and a quarterback. And some of that can be trained through that observation of finding out what each other likes. And I think the coaches that I know that are most successful aren't always the ones that try to conform the quarterback to their system, but have the openness to say, okay, not only are we going to develop our system around our talents, but we're going to develop our play calls around, you know, situational likes or comfort levels.
And Andy, this doesn't just apply to the offensive side of the ball. This applies to the defensive side of the ball as well. And, you know, when we're thinking about our safeties, for example, we have to have them comfortable in space, confident in space versus different receiver combinations, and allowing them to call the defense, for example, in certain parts of those practice starts to tell a defensive coordinator a little bit about, you know, here's your options here. What are you going to go to? And I think, you know, when we're thinking of this period, in order to maybe get some of those good strategies out of the players so that they're just not out there experimenting, is that you do put the competition phase into this at some points. Maybe not all of it, because you do want that experimentation. You do want them to feel comfortable that this is a setting and that they can go and try things out. But maybe make a period there where, you know, maybe it's a few up downs or whatever, but something's at stake where they have to win that rep. And you're going to see in that rep, in the presser situations, what do they go to?
We talk about the safeties as, you know, traditionally being the quarterbacks of the defense. I think the same setup works great. So if we're talking about that kind of half field or middle field, that combo 7-on-7 period, I find this extremely valuable with our split field coverage teams or our quarters coverage teams that may have multiple variations based on the offensive deployments or even the wide receiver splits. So we can do the same setup here, and now we're going to let the safeties make all the checks. Now, at this point, we've probably coached our safeties and our corners and our overhangs on which checks we want to do in which particular situations. But when you give them the ownership and let them call that themselves, the rule may say 7 to 10 yards, but you'll start to see them pushing the boundaries. Maybe if it's at 7 yards, they don't make the check. Maybe they wait and make the check when it's at 10 yards between the number one and the number two split. So you'll get a great feel for how they are calling the coverages or calling the checks. An example from when I was at Bucknell, we were a quarters coverage team, and, you know, we started off the season with probably four different checks out of the quarters based on, you know, tight end wing, twins, based on different splits. We ended up playing the same two variations probably 95% of the time, with one of our variations being the absolute leader. And the reason for that was we found we had a great comfort level from our overhangs and our safeties playing that version of the coverage. Now, as long as you don't think it's going to hurt you or it's not putting you in a pressurized situation versus certain looks, playing to their comfort level goes a really long way. We talked about the coach's evaluation of sometimes our players have these skill sets. We like this check better. But again, if we're looking at a split coverage team, so if we start playing particular checks, especially if they're not going to put us in a disadvantageous situation versus particular looks, we start to say, okay, our players are comfortable this, we master this technique, we feel good about these particular checks, and that may be the basis of what you do, and you use your other checks, you know, simply as a change-up or a change of pace. Again, we're looking at a split coverage team. You know, what are the differences between our boundary guys and our field guys? Which checks do they like? You start hearing the guys in the huddle, you know, hoping that they get certain formations because they want to play a particular coverage. Well, why is that? Is that a comfort level, or do they really want to trap because they think they're going to get that INT in that pick six? So you just start to learn a lot about your players. The other thing that I highly recommend with this is when you're working your groups, your ones and twos, make sure you give these guys what I would call a split session, where you go some reps with the ones, some reps with the twos, some reps with the ones back in, and some reps with the twos. That break, which would kind of signify a drive break, where the players get to come back and debrief and talk it over themselves, will tell you an absolute ton about your guys. So if the safety's making particular calls that he's really comfortable with, but it's putting your overhang in a position that he is not super comfortable with, they'll start to work that out or talk that out. You'll hear your overhang saying, hey, if one and two are this far apart, let's play this. Hey, if we get a tight end, let me do this. Now, the art of coaching, right, is taking that information, that feedback, and saying, do my players have the techniques that can do this really well, but if they're comfortable in that and they're lacking a bit in the techniques, maybe we can brush that up. Or if our players are really shying away from something, a great conversation can be had. Fellas, you know, I noticed we didn't call this particular check. Why is that? Tell me what you saw. A follow-up question that I really like and I've started using more and more is, what did that mean to you? So anyone that follows me probably knows I'm a very student-centered teacher, athlete-centered coach. So first question I always ask is, what did you see? But the second question is, what did that mean to you? So if you start hearing players talking about a formation and you ask your safety, what did that mean to you? And he said, well, I thought I was threatened to the inside, so I did this. Or I thought they had a chance to, you know, run a 1-2 exchange on the release. That's why I made this check. It gives you great insight into where they are in the developmental process. And it sounds a bit like a strong word, but I think the intervention of teaching our system and what we want has to start with where the players are at. And if we never give them ownership and never host that debrief, we don't get that information. So just like you said, give the players the ownership. Make sure you take notes of what formations and what checks they made to those formations. Look for patterns. And then in those meetings, make sure you debrief on why they did those things, what they saw, what it meant to them, why did they choose to make that adjustment. And I think you'll learn a lot about your players, not just their understanding of your system up to this point in the season, but also where they're comfort level is with the individual techniques or which checks or coverage options they like. That allows us in a third down situation to make a call that is not just sound, but also supports our guys' aggressive nature and being extremely comfortable that we're going to get off the field.
Andy, I think that debrief, that communication is critical for us to be able to build confidence in what we're doing. And when I look at, the different teams that I'll watch out there and go to their practices and watch the coaches interact with the players, I see the teams that are more successful have built that in. And it's the communication, it's the feedback. The players start to develop that sense of ownership, like you mentioned. I think it's critical for us to develop our teams that way, and you really start to bring things together as you put that into the process.
Spot on. And I think the other things about that is we are so, you know, obsessed with tempo and maximizing the practice time. But, the game of football gives us breaks, especially if you're a team that's playing single way football. You know, when the offense is on the field, our defense comes off of the sideline. So when you're sending in a second unit or you're switching periods, if you take 30 seconds, a minute, even 2 minutes to host that debrief, you're actually training your players as if we were coming to the sideline, getting some information, exchanging ideas, and getting ready for the next series. So while tempo is important, you know, sometimes we can get so far away from the actual pace of the game that we're not getting a full piece of information. We're not training to that game type. So don't be afraid to say, hey, the ones are going to get 10 reps. We're going to split it 6 and 4 with the twos going in between. And during that break, let's host a little fake sideline debrief, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, and what coverage checks we're going to use next time out, and then see if they can implement it. That's true ownership.
When we look at this idea of confidence, one area where I think we need a player who's extremely confident, and in doing so, in developing that player, we're going to get some of that hidden yardage, and that's the punt returner. That punt returner, at the very least, needs to be able to catch the ball in traffic. Even if that's a fair catch, that he's getting to the ball all the time and he's confident of bringing that ball in with people around is so important. It's the difference between having to gain several more first downs in the game. Field position is so important. So when we look at the typical way which we develop the punt returner, and if I go through, I would say this is true in quite a few programs. You're going to have your specialist period. Maybe it's at the beginning of practice. Maybe it's at some point in the practice, but you're going to give 5 or 10 minutes specifically to the specialist, your snappers, your kickers, your holders, your punters, and your returners to go out and do what they do with the ball without any other part of the scheme in place. So that punter is certainly getting used to catching the ball, but there's no other elements of the game that are there. Then we'll go into our special team period, and we're going to go and run reps. Most of the time, those are not live, so there's not that threat of getting hit, but at the same time, they're limited. We can only get a certain amount of reps if we're going all 11 players, and the setup of those drills just takes longer. So we don't maximize the opportunity for a player to gain confidence if those are the only situations that he's working in. And in order to solve that problem, we have what Andy's going to explain here is the pressure catch drill. And when I think of this, you know, it's funny, thinking of special teams, yesterday, listening to the Browns game, and I hear the radio host talk about how there's so many penalties for the Browns, and most of them are in special teams. And then he said, well, a lot of these guys are getting used to playing special teams. They probably didn't do a lot of that at the college level. And I'm thinking, if that's true, and we have to work these different aspects of special teams more at the NFL level, how much are we missing out at the high school level that these guys aren't really getting what they need? So I think this is a great opportunity. It's a drill that can be run over and over and over again in large spaces, small spaces, but give more of those reps and more of that game-like feel to our punt return.
I think contested catch is a drill we do a lot with our receivers, and why don't we do that pressure situations with our returners? So, the simple setup here is that we're going to take our returners out, and we're going to take our return group, and the guys that aren't returning are going to act as gunners. So you'll place guys, you know, offset on the angle coming in, and this can only be 5 or 10 yards away, so we're not wasting legs, but they're going to close in on the return man. Now, the other thing that I really like to do is we talk about that vision, decision, action cycle. Not only are there going to be guys coming down under control, obviously, who aren't going to, you know, make contact, but make sure you alter the speeds, the depths, and the angles that our gunners are coming towards our return man. So he's practicing the actual, you know, traffic catch. And part of the traffic of the return man to me is scanning the field in front of him and then reaching up and making the catch with, or looking up with his eyes and making the catch, excuse me. So if we just could track the ball the whole time, it would probably be pretty easy. So by having Gunners coming in at multiple angles and multiple reps, now he's scanning the field, looking for the thought process of, hey, they're bearing down on me, I need to fair catch this, or hey, they're far away, I can make this catch and then run. And also, which gunner is closest to me am I going to have to avoid? And that's going to go into his decision-making process on the catch. So now when we decide to fair catch it and we see the wave, both of our gunners are going to come up. They're going to respect the, you know, the free catch interference bubble, but they're going to be there as if a real gunner was, hoping for a fumble, hoping for the muff. If we don't get the fair catch, they're going to hold their run so that the guy can catch the ball again. No injuries here, but we start to see that natural difference. So our return man gets his eyes up. He sees who's the immediate threat. Now he processes that into his catching, catches the ball, and makes the proper cut based off of which side of the field he's getting gunner pressure on. I think something as simple as that, just adding reading the field and reading the gunners, makes it a much more difficult catch. And we can do, you know, the clapping games and getting in front of him, and that could be some great confusion. But to me, as a coach, most of the real challenge comes from attempting to do two things at once, reading the field and then making the catch. So let's institute some reading the field dynamics into the catch instead of, you know, just hitting them with pool noodles or things like that, to try to make it a game situation as possible while still stressing his decision making and making that catch contested via either space in the free catch bubble or pressure and quick cuts via the coverage.
I think those are three great examples of how we can build confidence. We're certainly not limited to those positions. So I would take the ideas of what we're doing here, and I think, again, breaking things up into components and finding ways to let players maybe call certain drills, certain reps. Maybe you're working pods in your, you know, or you're working half line with your offensive line, and maybe you let them make the call. And again, put it in that competition situation, let that flesh out what do they feel best about in those situations, and you'll start to see how those guys think as well, and it's going to give you that feedback you need to continue to develop them. Could be for really any position, at some point they have to make a decision. Or, like I said, you allow them to call certain parts, let them make the call what they want to do instead of having the coach do it all the time. I think lastly, the debrief is certainly can be done with any position. And as we discussed, it's a very important part of building that confidence in the player and for us getting some feedback as coaches as well.
Yeah, I think the understanding from the debrief that the coach will get on where the player's at with their learning and what they're thinking in those moments will really help you call a better game that suits them. You know, sometimes the scouting report may say there's one thing that's the best to call against a particular opponent, but playing to your player's strengths is ultimately going to be, I think, the best way to put them into position to succeed. So love the ideas. I think, you know, we use the term quarterback of the defense, quarterback of the offense, whether it's your center, whether it's a simple exchange between your defensive ends and backers or overhangs on the zone replay. Start to allow them to make some decisions for the sake of you getting a feel for them will go a long way into understanding the confidence that they have in the schemes you've instilled up to this point.
Coaches, best of luck this season. Do your best to build some confidence and figure out what your team needs to go out there and execute on game day. Next week, Andy and I are going to focus on the idea of compete and give you some ideas of competition within different drills and looking at some different drills in different ways.
Always great to be on, Keith. Appreciate the conversation. Thrilled to be part of the series. And as always, good luck this weekend, Coach.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.